for a moment to think of all those people who had first of all been caught up in the death of Jesus Christ. And if you think about it, there were those people who would have watched him being tried. There would have been those people who saw him being tormented and teased. Those who would have seen him being tortured. Those who would have seen him struggle on that road to Golgotha. Thousands and thousands of people. But on Easter Sunday, that number was very few. We hear about the ladies who went to the tomb. We hear about the disciples who went to the tomb. We hear about Jesus appearing to his 11 disciples. And we'll come on to another little story after that. But all those people who saw him crucified, those who wanted to see the end of him would have thought, that's great. It's all over, it's all done. We didn't want him anymore, and we've accomplished what we came to accomplish. Those who didn't want him to die would have thought, what on earth has gone on? Why has this gone so wrong? We thought he was going to be with us forever. If he was the Son of God, surely he could have just stepped down from the cross. Surely, as he did with Lazarus, getting Lazarus risen again, he could have just, you know, risen and shown himself to us. So there must have been, in all of those people, great confusion. How would we have reacted? If we'd been with Jesus, perhaps not as an immediate disciple, but perhaps as one of the followers, how would we have reacted when we saw him die on the cross? How would we have reacted when we hear of him being placed into that tomb, which wasn't even his own? Would our hearts have sunk? Would our hearts have been confused? Would we have just believed what we saw with our eyes, rather than what we had heard with our ears? This generation is a very visual generation. By that I mean we go by what we see. And that's why tablets, and I don't mean that sort of tablet, I mean that sort of tablet. That's why tablets and computers and new mobile phones and so on become so important to us. And if we've seen it on our tablet or on our phone or even on the television, then it must be true. And so these people have seen Jesus brought low. I was watching which is very unusual for me, but I was watching the rugby yesterday. Didn't England do well? But think about it, just this idea. There were 77,000 people in that stadium. 77,000 people. They were there to watch a match which, if you like, in real terms, lasted 80 minutes. Okay? An hour and 20 minutes. All right? They all came in, and then when the match was over, they all went out. And you can think of those streams of people all coming away from that single event. And it must have been like that, perhaps, after Jesus died on the cross. All those people had come to see this great spectacle, or what they hoped, perhaps, would be a great spectacle. And then when it ended, they all just drifted away with their own thoughts, with their own feelings. They'd seen they probably understood. They'd seen, but had they heard? When Jesus cries out on the cross, "It is finished," what did they think he meant? Oh, my life is finished? Or the work that they have got it? Oh, the work he came to do is finished? That's why some versions like to say it is accomplished, rather than it is finished. But I'll come on to that, I hope, a little bit later. So, if the technology is working, so we have the story of these two men on the road to Emmaus. But it's quite well described, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. So we can place that as an accurate geography, if you like. And these two men are walking along, and I can imagine they're a bit like two men walking home supporting Manchester United, but Manchester United has been trounced 4-0 by Melksham Town. And you can imagine them walking along with their heads, did you see the wicket? No, you didn't kick that ball, you missed it, come here. And so they're walking along with their heads down. So they were obviously on the, if you like, the edges, the peripheries of this group that knew Jesus, had seen Jesus, had seen what he had done and so on. But he hasn't lived up to their expectation. And so they're looking at the ground. Well, I thought he was going to, so did I, but he didn't, did he? He just went. I thought when they asked him, when they whipped him and so on, and they said to him, "Are you the Messiah?" And he didn't answer. Why didn't he answer? If he just answered, he could have stopped it so quickly. Why didn't he just stop it? Oh, that crap, when they post that throughout, court. Rewind. And when they placed that crown of thorns on his head, couldn't he just have transformed that into a crown of gold or something? But he didn't. I was very disappointed. I was disappointed as well. It was just, you can imagine them. They were walking so slowly, even the dust was unsettled. No, it didn't settle. Anyway, so they're walking on, the heads are down. And the thing that it says in the Bible, Jesus himself, and that's said very deliberately there, because it is to say Jesus in fleshly form joined them. It wasn't a spirit, it wasn't a vision, it wasn't a dream. Jesus himself joined them. Now Jesus knows what they're talking about. Of course he does. He can read their minds, he can read their hearts, he knows exactly how they're feeling. But he asks them, "What are you talking about as you walk along?" Well, can you imagine? Because obviously, if he's come from behind them, he's also come from Jerusalem. So, are you the only one who doesn't, coming from Jerusalem, doesn't know what's been going on? Please tell me. But this chap, we thought he was brilliant. We thought he was wonderful. We thought he was the answer to all our prayers. And yet, didn't come to anything. Jesus uses that word, which we now have misinterpreted entirely. How foolish you are. Now, he does not mean foolish in the sense of them being unintelligent. All right? He is not using the word foolish to mean that they are idiots. He is using the word foolish, as we see a little later on, in that they haven't joined the dots. Now, I like to think, though others may differ, that I am relatively intelligent. Thank you for your support. I'll tell you a couple of stories. I locked myself in here one day, and before Peter started on the door, I couldn't open that door. And I thought, I'm stuck. How am I going to get out of here? I know, I need a lever. So I looked in the drawer, but no, the only screwdrivers there are Phillips, they're not flat plate screws. So I went into the room of requirements, you know, junk room. I went into there, and the only thing I could find was a decent spade. So I got the edge of the spade into the, and was able to lever it out, open. I told Margaret that, and she said, well, why didn't you go out the front door of the church, go round, open the door with your shoulder, and do that? I thought, you idiot. I hadn't joined the dots together. And then a couple of Sundays ago, when the clocks changed, I thought, oh, I know, David wasn't here. Oh, I know what I'll do, I'll adjust the heating. I'll get the heating just right. So I'd done what I thought was right, and then I get a phone call from Margaret later saying, I've just come back to church and the heating is still on. Why is the heating still on? I say, oh, well, I explained what I'd done. And so in my head, I'm thinking, oh, I have to go back to church, I have to sort it out. If I don't do that, it'll be on forever and ever and so on. What does Margaret say? Oh, I'll just turn the thermostat down. Exactly, yeah. But that's it. Sometimes we can see all the dots, but we don't actually join them together. And that is what these men had done. They'd seen. And so Jesus takes them back to the knowledge that they have already. He takes them back to Moses, to the prophets, to show them that what has happened to Jesus has been prophesied right from almost the beginning of time. And if you read through, and especially that's why we did that lovely passage from Isaiah, if you read through the prophets, Jesus is the culmination of all of that. He is the one who has been spoken of for thousands and thousands of years beforehand. As I said, with Isaiah, and if you just read Isaiah itself, the whole of what happens to Jesus, including the resurrection and his ascension, is there in Isaiah. The whole of it is there. The whole of the suffering, the death, the resurrection, and the ascension is there in Isaiah. In the whole of that book, you get the whole panoply of God's plan. So this isn't just some sudden, instant happening. This has been prepared. Now, my dad was the vice principal of a college which trained men and women in heating engineering for oil. He worked for Shell Mex and BP. And one of the things he would do with them, he'd have the students in and they'd be going through things and so on. And then about the end of the first or the second week, he'd set them a paper. And he wouldn't have told them about it beforehand. The paper would be on the desks. And he'd say, you've got an hour to do this paper. There are, please go through it. And he would say, please make sure you read all these questions before you actually start writing. And it said at the top of the paper, please read all the questions before you start answering. And on one side were the first 9 questions. Okay. On the oversight was the 10th question. And the 10th question said this, or something like this. If you have got this far, put your pen and pencil down, sit still, and don't tell anyone. Right. And what you would see is one or two would suddenly, after a while, would smirk to themselves and put their pens down. The vast majority of them would have read the first question immediately. They're writing away. And then they look around and see other people are sitting still. So they turn, oh, and suddenly, and that's the point. There are times when we need to join up the dots in order that we see the whole picture. And basically what Dad was telling them was, before you start to work on a boiler, make sure you've read the instruction manual first. Now for men, that is quite difficult. For ladies, I think that's more obvious. But for men, we have... Thank you, Sylvia. We have a tendency to jump into a job, oh, I know what's wrong, and get all apart, and then try and put it back together, and there's a washer left. And put that on. But that's what Jesus was doing with these men, gently. Gently, he was showing them that the knowledge that they already had tells them what was going to happen. And the other thing about this story is that we only hear the name of one man. We only hear the name of Cleopas. And I believe that that is very much, and again, when they were talking with Jesus, they said, and that he was to redeem Israel. That's where their minds were. Their minds were, if you like, parochial, thinking just about Israel. Whereas when Jesus is speaking with them, he shows them that they've got to think bigger than that. They've got to think beyond that. Because, these words took me a few hours to get right. Jesus did not die to rescue a specific nation at a specific time in history. Sorry, I'll hold it. Jesus died to redeem all mankind for all eternity. As I said, that took me quite to get the wording absolutely right. Jesus did not die to rescue a specific nation at a specific time in history. Jesus died to redeem all mankind for all eternity. And I think that is something that we have to make sure that we get right in our hearts. It's not on one of my big things, but I'll put that up somewhere. And the other thing about this story is Jesus revealing himself at the table. Where is it that we are at our most relaxed? Not bed, I'm not saying. But when we're sat around the table, and I know in this day and age, it's quite rare for families to sit around the table together. That's what it's, that's the picture of them sitting around a table, being relaxed in each other's company. They've been with this man, this new person, a few hours. They've invited him to stay with them, and so there's a bit of a camaraderie between them. They're relaxed. Perhaps in Jesus' mind. He sees them as being at their most receptive. I'm always reminded of that program Bread. Remember Bread with the Boswells? Yeah. They always ended up around the table. That was the place where problems were solved, where they put their bits into, do you remember the China chicken? They used to put their money in. But that was the place that they came together. That was the common meeting point. And that's what Jesus is saying here. That he wants us to meet people at that point where they feel comfortable, where they feel at ease. And that's why we put up all our welcome above the church door there, because we want people to feel that they are welcome here, that this is a place where they can come. I mean, as I say, the Thursday afternoon friendship group was absolutely brilliant. You know, it was a wonderful time. If you're able to come along, please do. You won't laugh as much or go home with aching jaws. But we were together, we were chatting. Yes, we were being, I wouldn't say we were being, no, never mind. But we had a wonderful time. And I think because we had such a wonderful time, we got to know each other just that little bit better. And that's what this is about. Well, Jesus is, he's got them at the table. And how does he reveal himself? When he breaks the bread. That point of Holy Communion breaks the bread. And it's as if the scales fell off of their eyes. And he goes, did not our hearts burn within us as he revealed the scriptures to us? They know that they have had this intimate encounter with the Lord. They know now that everything that was said about him is and was true. And so instead of them walking downcast from Jerusalem to Emmaus, they rush back. You know, whereas before the dust wasn't disturbed when they were walking along, now I can imagine these plumes of dust behind them as they run back to Jerusalem to tell the others, we have seen the Lord. He has risen. So I ask you, my friend, where is the Lord for you? Is he just the teacher and preacher? Is he just the miracle worker and the storyteller? Is he the one who went to the cross to die for you? Or is he the one who rose again from the dead and is now seated alongside his Father in heaven? We have to make sure that the whole of that story, whole of that history, sorry, story is the wrong word, history, is in our hearts and in our minds. I'm not saying you're going to cram it all in overnight. I'm not saying that, please. And I'm one of the worst. I know my Bible verses. If you ask me where they come from, I can't remember Isaiah from Malachi, and I can't remember Zechariah from Nehemiah. And so I can't do that bit. But I do know where the Lord is in my heart. He's in heaven alongside his Father. And the Holy Spirit is here in this room to lead us and to guide us. So if you have any doubts, don't. Simple, easy thing to say. If you have any doubts, don't. Read that story from The Road to Emmaus. These two men had doubts. And theirs were doubts that were based on what they had seen. Has anyone here seen the Lord in real life? We may see him in our dreams. We may see him in those prayers and so on. But you've seen him. He is alive today. And he is just as powerful today as he ever was. Amen.